And I think that's what I would encourage women to do more, is those who are pioneering, make it easier for the women, you know, coming after you to come into your, you know, into your space a lot easier.
Today is a good day to take a moment to stop and be grateful. What are you grateful for today? Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hungry Women at Work, the podcast for the woman who wants to thrive at work without losing her soul. I'm Nivile Malloy, and I have a lot to be grateful for today. But in particular, I'm grateful for anybody who's working to improve the lives of communities and individuals, much like the guest on our show today. But more about her a bit later. What are you grateful for? Won't you take a moment to hook us up on WhatsApp on 060-921-6977? Or you can even connect with us now on Instagram. Whoop, whoop. Why not follow us at Hungry Women at Work and follow the hashtag HWAW. We'd love to hear what you're grateful for today and also what your thoughts on the show have been thus far. So my guest on the show today is Annie McWalter, the CEO of Psyche Enterprise Development and also the Hope Factory, which is a economic transformation NPO. Welcome, Annie McWalter.
Thank you very much. Really great to be with you.
So in addition to this huge role that you hold, you are also really passionate about mentoring, about creating jobs, about calling out and developing the spiritual and mental well-being of women. And you happen to be a really good friend of mine. So it is a special treat for me to have you on the show today. And Annie, I've known you since 2009 when I first moved to Johannesburg, and you were probably my first friend in Johannesburg. And one of the things that's always stood out for me is your heart for people. You just have such an incredible capacity to develop people and share of yourself with the people around you. And that hasn't changed. So you have a background in industrial psychology, in the sciences, and also in social entrepreneurship. You love learning, lady.
Yep, I do.
And so tell us what all this learning has meant for you and how it's brought you to where you are today.
So I think for me, I bought in quite early on into this concept of lifelong learning. And I think that I've got this passion to always, you need to remain curious. And you need to always be adding to what you already know. I do think that there's a time when you maybe come to where you realize you don't have to do that through degrees. So I've collected a few degrees, but I think stopped a few a few years ago. The concept of lifelong learning, of reinventing your knowledge base, of constantly growing is very crucial. And I think the way that the world is moving, you have to constantly be learning and adapting. So, you know, there's this whole thing of everybody's talking about the fourth industrial revolution and how the machines are going to take over and all of that type of thing. And, you know, everyone feels like, whoa, is there going to be jobs for us? But the one thing that a machine cannot do is create something from new and think and create a new business like entrepreneurship from scratch. Also, a machine cannot truly connect with people and show empathy and mentor. So that for me is kind of an area that I realized I'm really passionate about, is that human side of things and how we can continue to improve human lives. And for me, seeking out people's potential and helping them to grow it. So, so I think these days my learning is not necessarily by books and by universities, but you constantly needing to adapt and grow. So, it is something that I believe very strongly in. And for young women out there to recognize that they do need to constantly be learning, and the real importance of having some knowledge base from which to, you know, kind of, yeah, start your career and improve in your career.
I like that, lifelong learning. It's true. And I mean, yeah, the talks about the fourth industrial revolution have got a few of us a little bit concerned, but you're right. A machine cannot connect with humans. And in your role as CEO of the Hope Factory and now Psyche Enterprise Development Fund, I know developing people is at the core of the business, but tell us a bit more about the organizations and what your role is.
We were made aware that some of the activities that we were doing under the Hope Factory were not quite public benefit types of activities. They were tax attracting. And so, yeah, we spinned off the new company, Psyche Enterprise Developments, in March this year. We started it last year, but it really wasn't, it was only active from March this year. And what we've developed is actually a platform where we really would like to mobilize the CA profession behind the development of financial excellence in entrepreneurs. And so we're looking to work with small accounting practices. There's close to 9,000 small accounting practices across the country. And they already are in some ways working with these small businesses. What we want to do is we want to bring more work their way, and we want to create standards in the area of financial excellence in entrepreneurs. And we're going to work with the profession to do that. What we want to do is we want to take unemployed graduates who have accounts 3, and we would like them to become ATSA members, which means they will develop on the job, they will become members of Psyche, and they will do the books for small businesses. And we will have small accounting practices signing off those financial accounts and their management accounts and financial accounts, annual financial statements. So we have the quality coming from the CA or the general accountants, and we have the actual practical work being done by the unemployed accounting graduates who now are going to, you know, become experienced, grow, and themselves could potentially become an accounting practice in the future or will be absorbed by an accounting practice. And we have, we're going to be working with the Youth Employment Service, which is a service that is really aimed at getting young people into jobs. So they have done the research, and it's a person who has work experience is 3 times more likely to get a work experience, to get another job. Three times more likely. So the Youth Employment Service is a very key partner of ours, and they're going to help to co-sponsor these young unemployed accounting graduates to do the books for small businesses, and we will work with the small accounting practices to host them. And it's also solving some of the issues for some of these small accounting practices where they say, we find it difficult to find good people. And so together we will help do the matching, as well as servicing the SMME with quality accounting. Yeah, services.
This is fascinating stuff. I mean, it's just, we've got such a crisis when it comes to unemployment in South Africa and other parts of the world too. So it's just fascinating for me when established business is actually doing something to redress this issue. What kind of response are you seeing from unemployed graduates, and what are some of the things that you would share with unemployed graduates who are feeling quite demotivated right now and wanting to get into the job market?
So I think it's important for you to, as an, if you are unemployed, to really work on your networks, because it is really what you need to get into is a network that is associated with your particular area of study.
Okay.
So, because, yeah, I think it's really difficult to just find a job out of nowhere.
Yes.
It needs to be in a particular area. And I think for someone who is particularly a graduate, I think the best place is to start with a profession that is associated with your particular area of, you know, that you have graduated from. So to approach those professions. So yeah, for us, what we're really trying to do is look at we know that they have some level of knowledge, but what we're wanting to get them ready for is actually on the job, practical experience. Because I think what's tricky is that the university prepares you for a world that's actually quite different when you get out into the work world. You know, there's sometimes that disconnect between what the degrees of what you're studying and what the world of work is actually requiring. I'm quite excited about the YES program because I think it really is trying to meet a need of creating these opportunities for young people. And I think what's nice about our model, it's working specifically with the graduates, and they will, when they start doing the books for small businesses, as those businesses grow, their job increases. You know, they will continue to do as that business grows. So their work is continuing. So that's what we're trying to feed into. And I think that would be, you know, what we would hope a young unemployed graduate can grow, that there's actually a trajectory that they can take, that they can grow in. I think that can sometimes be quite disheartening for a young person starting out, is, you know, doing something very menial and it has nowhere where it's going. But if there's a path where they can develop and get better skills and with experience grow and get more experience, greater opportunities from that experience, that's what we're hoping to create. Yeah.
This is really phenomenal work. You mentioned also about capacity building for entrepreneurs, and I know that's a core part of your business. What does the landscape of entrepreneurship in South Africa look like? Is it different for women?
Sure. Well, I think that landscape of entrepreneurship is very fragmented in this country. So there is so much going on in this space, but entrepreneurs do not know what's happening. Mm. There isn't one place where they can go to. So, what we're starting to see is the development of applications, of websites that are starting to try pull all of that together, which is exciting for us. I think for women in particular, what you're seeing in the landscape at the moment is that women entrepreneurs are more likely to be lifestyle types of entrepreneurs. So they're not necessarily going after a big company to grow it and high growth. They're opting more for businesses that is suited towards being able to do what they want to do. The stats are quite interesting. I think they have been going down in terms of women entrepreneurship, but
That's a huge pity.
Yeah, it is a pity. I think just our economic environment's been quite tricky and difficult, and so I think a lot of people have been opting for more safety. So we've seen that, but there are phenomenal women entrepreneurs in this country.
Yes, they are.
I think, sometimes the trickiness is to be able to, you know, be a mom and an entrepreneur at the same time,
an aunt and a cousin and a sister and a wife and a daughter and
so there's many roles that need to that a woman needs to juggle in terms of their journey, but needless to say, I would say that women entrepreneurs are doing well in this country, and there certainly is support for that in the country, a lot of support for that, and I think probably very much in the BBBE codes, there's quite a strong support for women entrepreneurship, which is really stunning. It's an area that I think could probably need more support. At Psyche Enterprise Development, we aim to support them through the financial excellence aim, you know, but there are many incubation programs, acceleration programs out there. And with the Hope Factory, which is the non-profit part, which you mentioned, the Hope Factory actually owns Psyche Enterprise Development. So any money that we make from
the NGO
Psyche
owns for-profit.
Yeah.
I love that.
Well, it's part of the social entrepreneurship side. So any kind of profits that we make will be plowed back into the work that we want to, to do. And the Hope Factory really specifically is focusing on startup entrepreneurs and looking at supporting them in three areas of leadership development, of business skills, as well as the financial excellence, putting those kind of foundations for the finances in place so that when they get to Psyche ED, we don't have to do too much work. You know, we've already laid quite a strong foundations, but we are supporting a lot of women in on our programs with the Hope Factory here.
You are doing amazing work. And I just want to say to all of the listeners out there, come on, ladies, we need to get this, start that business. Take that leap. There's so much support, as you're mentioning, and that's so good to know, such an encouragement. So you spoke now about the three arms that you develop, and one of them is the leadership side of things. You've been a leader for a number of years now, and you've developed many people along the way, both formally and informally. What are some of your leadership lessons over the last few years, and how you lead?
The core of leadership is taking accountability for the direction that you're going, either even as a company or as a person. You know, you need to lead yourself. So it starts with self-leadership and kind of leading yourself. If you can't lead yourself, then it's going to be very difficult to lead others.
Let's take a moment. That is a pearl of wisdom right there. If you cannot lead yourself, it's going to be very hard for you to lead someone else.
Yeah. So I think it starts with setting out what is important to you in terms of your values. So working out what your values are and working out what your purpose is and what your passion. Your passion should be connected to your purpose, but what you believe is your purpose. What is your God-given, in a sense, DNA that he put inside of you? And a lot of that is becoming aware of what you're most passionate about, what you seek to achieve, and then going about. And that's part of the learning is getting the tools to be able to do that you're most passionate about. So you might have a purpose that you've worked out, but how do you effectively do that purpose? What are you, what are the kind of, what's the framework that you need? What are the tools that you need? What is the knowledge that you need to be able to do that purpose effectively?
As you've led, I mean, there are some challenges that are unique to women in leadership. It's not always easy leading from the front, and there are a number of expectations that come with the job. How have you navigated leading as a woman and then still bringing your own individual style, your own flamboyance to the role without being typecast or conformed to a role?
So I think every woman will have to find their own leadership path, because I don't believe that there's a one-size-fits-all cookie-cutter type of leader. And you lead from your personality, you lead from your strengths and your weaknesses. So as a woman, I think I was lucky because when I came into the Hope Factory had been started by a woman. So there wasn't a lot of change needed in terms of, you know, they were used to having a woman leading them. What I did find is that, you know, you need to, it's sometimes difficult stepping into a founder's shoes.
Of course.
Because they lead in a different way.
Yes.
And so I just had to kind of get people used to the way that I lead, and it was a different way.
Well done to you. That must have been the storming, norming phase of the journey.
Norming and then performing, yes. So I think my advice would be for women is to don't try to be like a man in leading. You're never going to be like that.
I like that.
So, you know, I think that stage of where you're needing to act like a man as a leader is actually falling away.
Oh, fantastic. That's good news.
It's easier in the work that I do with entrepreneurs. Yes. It's a little bit more open. It's maybe with the corporate sphere, the very heavy corporate, it might be a bit different. But I do believe that women bring a different style to their leadership. They're thinking more inclusively. That was one of the things that I needed to learn, was to listen more. I'm still working on it.
I think we all are.
But I think you can fully be yourself as a woman, as a leader. And I do believe that the world that we're going into is also, social media has made it very much more connected and connecting. And women are natural connectors and natural in terms of that. I think, I also am lucky in that within Saika, I am reporting into a woman who is a very strong woman.
Wow.
And so I think that's also been quite easy for me. So I maybe haven't had the challenges that a lot of women leaders tend to get. I think that my particular direct report into Saika, she would have probably had quite a lot of challenges.
Sure.
And so she's fought a lot of battles. So I'm lucky to be able to, kind of come in not having fought a lot of those battles.
Well, that's a big point that you've touched there about the women going before who fought the battles.
Correct.
So that, those of us stepping in don't have
easier.
To.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
phenomenal.
Yeah, and I think that's what I would encourage women to do more, is those who are pioneering, make it easier for the woman, coming after you to come into your, into your space a lot easier. So I love Sheryl Sandberg, the CEO of Facebook, and her book Lean In. And she speaks about women also making it easier for other women, because she talks about women having a place at the table and how men naturally they believe they have the right to have a place at the table.
They own the table. They bought the table, man. Come on now.
It's very easy for them. Whereas sometimes I think for us females, we don't naturally believe that we have that place at the table.
That's
and
so true.
Ability to just speak. And so Sheryl speaks about that quite nicely in her book Lean In. And she also talks about other women making the way for other women. So really encouraging them. So it's lovely. I loved a lot of her sentiments as well around that. And it is important for us to support one another in leadership and being fully who we are.
Absolutely. So we're going into a section now called rapid fire questions, where I fire some questions at you and you just tell me the first answer that comes to mind.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes.
A song that always gets you through the day.
I listen to Jesus Culture Radio, which is available on iTunes, and there are many songs that get me through the day there.
A book that's changed the way you think about work.
Muhammad Yunus, Creating a World Without Poverty.
A gadget or app that helps you work smarter.
So definitely the iPad.
Your advice to your younger self.
Play more and don't be so scared of relationships.
Three things that help keep you centered.
I read the Psalms, the Passion Version, which is amazing. Makes the Psalms really come alive. But just having that space in the morning, just me and with nature, with God, is definitely what keeps me centered. The second thing that keeps me centered is worship. So worshiping and being the gratitude. And yeah, praising God. And then the third thing is getting out into nature often. So going to the bush, looking for the birds, looking for the animals, just hearing the voices of nature is definitely calms me down. And I love that. Yeah.
One thing you do to overcome distraction.
I am quite good to focus. So if I need to get something done, I will only focus on that. So it's just I look at one thing ahead of me at a time.
Your advice to younger working women?
Learn as much as you can. Be open, be teachable, be flexible. Ask questions. Don't think you can't ask questions. Be curious. Believe in yourself.
Your advice to senior women leaders?
Give the younger women a chance. Listen to them. They may be open to new ideas. give them attention as much as you can. Yeah.
Annie McWalter, you have just been added to my list of things I'm grateful for today. Thank you for being on the show with us today and for sharing your insights with us. And keep thriving as that working woman who's not losing her soul.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the opportunity.
Hey there, and thank you for listening to our show today. In each episode, we respond to a question from a listener. And today's question comes from Natasha in Midrand. Natasha asks, how do I focus on my personal development when I have so little time as a working mom and wife? Whoa, Natasha, talk about a loaded question. Now, as a working mom and wife myself, this is an area of challenge for me. And I'll be honest and say that for the first few years of my child's life, I was flunking royally in this area. In that season, personal development at its best was managing to go to gym once a month. You know what I'm saying. Now, every working mom or any woman with relational demands has a checklist of must-do tasks that prevent the family from falling apart. You know that one. Grocery shopping, meal planning, childcare, budgeting, date nights. Say what? The switch for me was realizing that on that must-do list was my own personal growth. So I started scheduling personal development goals as part of that must-do list. But I started small. 10 minutes of reading a new book before bedtime. 20 minutes of exercise twice a week while listening to a podcast on a new topic. Taking my child on a play date to a place I found enriching, like the museum, a dance exhibition, or the bookstore. Small things to build the family culture around every member of the house, including good old working mama. In time, that list could grow to organizing a more fixed regular hobby day with your friends, where you can learn a new skill like Thai cooking or salsa dancing. Perhaps you could use your lunchtime at work to do a webinar or an online tutorial, or even try a short-term course through GetSmarter.com, an online platform where you build your learning around your life schedule. I think the main thing is you need to be intentional about your personal development, even when the relational demands are high. Be hungry about your own growth. It really will benefit everyone around you, most especially yourself. If you'd like to add your comment to Natasha's question, follow Hungry Woman at Work on Instagram or send us your thoughts on WhatsApp on 060-921-6977. To listen to more episodes, check us out on SoundCloud, Iono FM, Player FM, or iTunes. Until next time, keep thriving at work without losing your soul.